Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, you know what I did yesterday, Tony? Took my son for a haircut. Not Colin, this one right here. Look at him. We're twinsies today. We both got our haircut yesterday.
I know. I was like growing a borderline mullet back here. It was getting disgusting.
Were you really? I didn't notice that.
It was bad.
How about, you know, people say that too. Like, wow, your hair's really long when I don't get it cut for like 2 weeks. And it is for me when I go 2 weeks. I'm back on the every week mode because we're back in TV mode now, Tony. Yeah. I got to get it cut every Wednesday so it grows out a half a millimeter by Friday when we film your Jags fantasy football, which we will do tomorrow for the first episode of the season, which will air Saturday night at 11 on CW17, Sunday morning at 11:30, and that'll be the way it rolls all throughout the football season as well. Oh, there's your email. I just got it.
Were you guys ever concerned about, you guys are big fantasy players and you play a little DFS
as
well.
Yes.
The whole distinction of probable being gone, that really hurts DFS and fantasy players, doesn't it?
It can potentially hurt everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If the teams use it the way the league seems to want them to use it, which is probable guys just won't be listed anymore, then it wouldn't hurt, right? Because then they're just not on the injury report. But if they use it to list probable guys as questionable just to screw with the head of other teams, then yeah, it could be bad.
I guess you got to pay attention to the daily injury reports after practice.
Yeah, pretty. I mean, you got to just stay plugged into to what's going on. And now more than ever, the 90 minutes prior to those 1 o'clock kickoffs are going to be crucial on Sundays. But it's much like, Tony, the new kickoff rule. Here's how we'd like it to impact the game. Well, you know what? We're going to try to coffin corner pooch it
and
bust somebody up at about the 18-yard line. How do you feel about that, NFL?
I think teams may do it early. I still think anybody who has a kicker that can put it in the end zone during, you know, crucial moments in a game, no one's returning a kick.
Maybe. If they get burned. Depends on how good their coverage teams are. I don't think that's a mortal certainty. I would debate you on that one.
I just, like in Jacksonville, if they're in a game where they have a 4-point lead with a minute left in the game.
Oh, sure. Something like that.
Kick it through the freaking end
zone.
Don't
Nobody's give
a guy returning
a
kick against us.
Right. The 5 yards at that point isn't worth the risk of the 45-yard return.
And I think any team
that
has a kicker that can do that, it won't be an issue there. Now, will they play around with it at other points in the game? Maybe. I mean, we'll see. But yeah, that rule doesn't look like it's going to work out the way the NFL wanted it to.
All right, a couple of notes or a couple of comments here from Kelvin Beachum yesterday really caught my eye. And again, we'll hear from Ryan O'Halloran as he got a chance to talk to him yesterday in the Jaguar locker room. The Jags did practice yesterday in full pads. Beachum said afterwards, "I'm ready, but again, it's up to Coach Bradley and doing what's best for the team." Brad was asked if he had turned a positive corner, reading O'Halloran's notebook here. He says, "We'll see. All the evidence is good. He took quite a few reps. The arrow continues to be up. We'll see how he progresses throughout the week." Got to believe without a setback, they're going to let him go as much as he feels like he can handle on Sunday night. We may get a glimpse for the first time of the Jaguars starting five offensive line, which may, Tony, right now I'm optimistic that it could turn out to be a strength of this football team after last year being one of the biggest eyesore units on the field.
Could be, at least when the starting five are out there. It's real thin up there on the offensive line. But we knew that when basically the plan became clear about how they were going to approach this thing. And look, when you look around the league, it's not like the Jaguars are going to be the only team where fans are going to be calling every day to whatever local radio show they have and saying, "Man, the offensive line, if anyone gets hurt, we're going to be in real trouble." That's the NFL.
Right.
There's just not enough big guys to go around for all these NFL teams, so you hope your starting line is good enough, and you hope if anybody gets hurt that somebody can just be serviceable when they get onto the football field. And it looks like they may have a couple guys that here in the preseason have shown themselves to be that, especially on that interior of the line. But, yeah, I think it could be better than even a lot of us thought it would be, and it's been the most pleasant surprise of the first 2 weeks of the preseason is how good that offensive line has played, especially when Blake Bortles was out there on the field. How well they've blocked and gotten that running game going has been honestly shocking
the first two weeks. If you'd asked 2 or 3 weeks ago what is the biggest area of concern on the team, which we have, majority, I would say, said the left side of the offensive line, right? The left tackle, left guard, uncertainty. It's not completely solved yet, but I think you're feeling better about it. So today we ask you now, halfway through the preseason, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day: what's your biggest worry at the moment for the Jags as you look at it? Maybe it's the penalties, right? Maybe it's inexperience of a lot of guys not having played together on the defensive side of the football. You're counting on rookies to play a lot, even as talented as they are. There's going to be a learning curve. Maybe it's still the offensive line. Maybe it's Blake Bortles. Once he gets into actual game type situations, is he going to be as efficient with the football as he's been in the preseason? Whatever that is, share your thoughts with us on Facebook at the Jaguars Today Facebook page, on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. And of course, you can hit us up on the text line driven by Duval Ford or on the phone line. Same number, 641-1010. By the way, speaking of offensive line, I don't know if you noticed that Houston, without their projected starting center now, center Nick Martin was one of the more highly regarded centers in the draft, was expected to start right out of the gates. He will undergo ankle surgery and miss the entirety of the 2016 NFL season. I weep for the Texans.
Yeah.
Right now.
Apparently it was a high ankle sprain that just wasn't healing.
Yeah.
So now he's going to have to surgery and bye-bye 2016.
There goes 2016 for the Houston Texans. I'm sure we'll all be losing sleep at night over that one. All right, coming up next, Jaguar beat writer Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union joins us live on the phone lines from Everbank. And again, coming up today, Blake Bortles, Todd Wash, a little from Gus Bradley. We'll mix it all in. Plus your feedback, your phone calls, whatever you want to get into today. It's Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's a Farrah and Farrah Thursday on Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field.
I'm ready, you know. But again, it's just up to Coach, you know, Coach Bradley and the training staff and doing what's best for the team at this point. I can see the light. Very close. I don't know how close, but I really feel close to being similar to myself, and that's a good thing right now.
That's Kelvin Beachum yesterday following Jaguars practice, speaking to Ryan O'Halloran and others gathered in the Jaguars locker room. By the way, Tony, I know you don't watch Fear the Walking Dead. Tyler, do you watch Fear the Walking Dead?
I do not, no.
I think it's Trask, the guy who owns the boat. I think he just walked in the front door. Not 100% certain it's him.
Should we be concerned? Or
no, I'm just saying. I don't think he's like a real person. He's a character, but a man who looks very similar to that character just walked in the front door of 1010XL. Maybe I'm going to get my big break in the Northeast Florida version of Fear the Walking Dead. Oh, that's pretty close to the original. They're up in Georgia, or at least they started in Georgia. Let's talk to Ryan O'Halloran and get it back to the Jaguars, shall we? Because nobody seems to be picking up on that whatsoever. O'Halloran, how are you, sir?
Good. I'm in the middle of Grand Central Station here, known as Everbank Field, so I apologize if there's any noise.
No, we like noise. It gives the illusion that you're working hard, so that's nice. Kelvin Beachum, we saw your write-up in the paper, and we heard some of his comments. How close, Ryan, should Jaguar fans be excited that they're going to get an extended look at him this Sunday?
Well, I think that's to be determined how extended the look is going to be.
Okay.
I think it'll take until tomorrow for them to say that he's going to actually play. And if you're going to play, you might as well start him. So it's how comfortable do they feel giving him 40 snaps or 20 snaps. And I don't think it's as fait accompli as maybe he is hoping it sounded yesterday. But I think things definitely took a turn for the better in terms of the Jaguars yesterday, which to me it's shocking that it has maybe happened this soon after what we've heard the last couple weeks.
All right, in your opinion, if let's say he can get on the field, whatever amount that is, maybe it's 20 snaps, whatever they determine, and he comes through successfully, doesn't have any setbacks, does that then put him, in your opinion, on track to be the starting left tackle on opening day?
Yeah, I think it would make it a done deal.
Okay.
Because you're not going to, in theory, if he makes it through the starter snaps on Sunday night, you're not going to put him out there for more snaps against Atlanta 3 days later. So you spend the next 2 weeks getting him ready, and you spend the next 2 weeks getting Luke Jokel ready to play or ready to compete at inside and figure that part out before the practices for Green Bay start 2 weeks from yesterday.
You know, Ryan, it's felt like here in the last week or so, and while they've been waiting for Beachum to get back on the field, and maybe it's just the play of Luke Jokel that's put them in this kind of position, it felt like the language that they used when talking about getting Beachum back changed. And now that he's back on the field, it does appear, if he plays this week, he probably is the starting left tackle when we get to opening day against Green Bay. But it did feel like the conversation was changing, and I think that was happening because Luke Jokel has looked really good at left tackle through the first 2 weeks of the preseason.
That's a good point, Tony, because Sunday during Gus's conference call, which was like, 15 hours after the game got over, he talked of Luke Jokel and sounded like, okay, yeah, fingers crossed on Kelvin Beecham. Well, obviously he got a good report in the next 2 days after that, because now he's like talking about how that the arrow is pointing up. So I think from Gus's standpoint, he was dealing with the facts he had at that point and maybe hadn't had his latest report on Beecham. But I think Jokel deserved a little dap for what he was doing. But also, I think Gus was getting him ready, saying, in case we need you at left tackle, I believe in you.
Gotcha. Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union, here with us on Twitter, at Ryan O'Halloran. You know that already. Frequent co-host on Jaguars Today. Ryan, also in your notes column you talk about Miles Jack and the plan, according to Todd Wash, who spoke to the media. We'll hear his comments coming up. And Gus Bradley, the plan is to get him some first-team reps this week, which apparently, according to your reporting, took Miles Jack a little bit by surprise. Is this a case of they're going to try to sub him in for Posluszny, because he's been playing middle from what we've seen? We don't know what they're doing behind closed doors when the practice is closed. Is that what you envision, though? He's going to get some run as a first-team middle linebacker, or do you think they might incorporate him in some other spots?
The way they have it sound is that when they take Posluszny out of the game on Sunday night, it's going to be for good. So it would be your base and nickel, but it's not going to be a rotation type thing. And Todd Wash spun it very quickly, saying, hey, Paul Posluszny doesn't need as many snaps as other guys here in the preseason. So I don't think this is a changing of the guard, but I think what this is, okay, you want to give Miles Jack some reward for the progress he's made, but also you have to find out if he can be ready for some nickel duty early in the season.
Because fans have been freaking out about this for the last 2 weeks. Dante Fowler was the star of the early part of training camp. He flashed all over the field during the scrimmage, but hasn't made many plays in the first two preseason games. How important is it for Dante Fowler, who should get an extended look this week, maybe even the entire first half, depending on how much they want to expose him, but how important is it for him to make a couple plays this weekend?
I think it's hugely important. He needs to get some momentum going into the season, and he's had a welcome to the NFL last couple weeks here. And, you know, for all the talk that he's been here last year and went through the meetings and learned the defense, he's still a rookie, and he's going to hit a brick wall any given week by the competition he faces. So I thought the coaches yesterday were pretty revealing, saying, hey, you know, part of the process is you got to do some stuff off the field and change your habits a little bit. Not sure if that was like sending him a message. If Dante treats it that way, and maybe he does come around, but I think he needs to have some success. I think they need to put him in some positions to have success, even if that means calling a blitz or two to get him a one-on-one matchup, because you want 56 raring to go on September 11th.
Ryan, penalties second week in a row, way too many, where they have 12 the first week, 13 this past week, many declined. Now, we understand some of them are, you know, with the coaches trying to work out the nuances of when they're allowed on the field and not allowed on the field, but it's not all that. Does this seem, in talking to folks down there, that it's a major concern, or do they feel like this is preseason, we're working through it, we'll be fine once the regular season rolls around?
It hasn't been a big talking point the last couple of days because it is the preseason, and, you know, you look at the Talvin Smith thing, generally in his career, he hasn't done that. And then, you know, the coaches on the field, they'll figure that out. They won't call that a lot. Then as far as the procedure stuff, I mean, the worrisome part for Jaguar fans should be if they're getting false starts, delay of games, illegal formations on offense that would show, okay, why don't they know how to line up yet? But they're not having that kind of stuff. So, you know, the penalty thing for me is one of those things where it's going to be worrisome when it has to be, which is week one.
Are we seeing them use the running backs the way you think we will when the regular season gets here? It doesn't feel like it's going to be this guy gets a series. It's going to be, we're going to mix these guys in whenever the heck we want, depending on the situation we're in that particular play.
It's interesting because the thing is, they've only had one three and out. And that's what, so they've had the opportunity to sub TJ or Chris and vice versa when they've had these long drives. You know, the three and out to start the game last week, it was TJ on the field for all three snaps. I think that's the only scenario where you see one guy play a series by himself is a quick one. But I'm really surprised at how they're doing, like, two plays here, one play, then three, then two, then whatever. I think it's going to be skewed a little bit because TJ's probably going to be your third down guy. But I do think on a long drive, you're going to see them on the field, you know, rotating for each other, because it shows you they have a comfort level in the same kind of stuff they're running.
All right, our question of the day is asking folks halfway through the preseason, what is your single biggest worry at the moment? I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, vast majority of people would have said the left side of the offensive line. It still may be the case for some people, but from your perspective, what is the biggest danger area or thing you want to see corrected over the next couple of weeks?
Well, the left side of the line would be the number one thing, but to go on to the defense, haven't seen a ton from a four-man pass rush yet. They're saying they're causing disruptions and flushing out of the pocket, but they're still being able to, you know, get rid of the ball. And Jameis was able to run around and scramble a little bit. So, you know, you take that with a grain of salt, saying they're not probably running a lot of games. But I think maybe this week you want to see a little bit more out of that four-man pass rush.
You know, it's amazing. We've commented on this a couple different times throughout the offseason, how little we talk about Blake Bortles when we sit down and talk to anybody right now with his football team. But he's been so impressive through the first 2 weeks. It looks like whatever momentum he's had throughout this offseason has shown up through the first couple preseason games. Just for the first team offense in general, Ryan, how important is Sunday night against Cincinnati just to keep this wave of momentum going, because it's really going to be the last time that we see him before Green Bay gets here?
Yeah, I'm torn on that one, Tony. Is, you know, even if things don't go great Sunday night, they can still say, hey, we got a lot of things done during those first two games. So I don't say it's hugely important because of the good stuff they've built up. But, you know, I'm going to ask Greg Olsen this later today or in a couple minutes, is the only situation they really haven't faced is a hurry-up. So do they want to throw that in there regardless of what time in the game it is? Because they've had backed up on their own goal line. They've had red zone. They've had short yardage. They've had third down. But I think the only thing they want to accomplish besides staying healthy is maybe a hurry up and then touchdowns instead of field goals. But regardless of what happens on Sunday night with the offense, they have to feel good moving forward.
All right, Ryan. Greg Olsen is going to speak to the media today, right? I know that's coming up. What are you writing about, including that, I'm assuming, over the next few days?
Tomorrow, Hayes is going to write about the tight end situation. And, you know, they have six tight ends. You know, the first two. Are there four tight ends for two spots or three spots? And they're all pretty even, so there's going to be that. And then we'll have a story on Tyson Alualu in terms of he's going to have to play price and defensive tackle and base defense this weekend, depending on the injuries. And then I'll plug a week from Sunday in the print edition, a 16-page Jaguars NFL season preview that will be trickling online, I think, Friday or Saturday.
All right, I'll look forward to that. By the way, have you seen the meme online of you and Hayes with the birthday hats on celebrating, like at a Jaguar press conference? Have you seen this?
I have not.
It's tremendous. As somebody used it to wish Big Cat Country a happy birthday. I'm assuming it's the anniversary of their founding today. So go check it out. It's on the Big Cat Country retweeted it. It's on their timeline. You'll enjoy that. All right, it's you.
Okay.
And you and one of your rare smiles. They caught you.
Hey, I laugh a lot.
I know you do, brother. Hey, listen, we'll get you back in studio next week, man. Look forward to it. Thanks for the time this morning.
All right, take care, folks.
All right, buddy. There he goes, Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union. It is well worth the visit to Big Cat Country's timeline on Twitter if you haven't seen it. Yeah, happy birthday, if that, in fact, is the case. I'm assuming it is for Big Cat Country. How many years has Big Cat Country been going?
I don't know.
I don't either. I know. Honestly, I hate to even hazard a guess because I could be just way off one way or the other.
Don't let us know.
Tyler is quickly looking that up. I'm gonna guess 6 years. Does that sound about right?
Maybe.
I
don't know.
I feel like I could be way off. I could be significantly off in either direction.
Yeah.
And I apologize for that. There are friends over there. What do you got?
They joined Twitter in January 2008. So that's probably about the same time
frame. 8 years then, right? Probably.
About the same time frame, I'd say.
Well, if they joined in January of 2008, then they probably were up and running in 2007, you would think. So maybe 9 years, something like that. Told you I was...
Happy ninth
I just
birthday.
Wanted to get within three, and I hope that's the case. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Happy birthday, regardless. All right, coming up, we'll hear from Todd Wash. Tomorrow we'll hear from Greg Olsen. David Garrard, by the way, has confirmed he will be back in studio with us tomorrow. Uh-oh. Talk about the importance of that third preseason game from his perspective as a league veteran. And we'll also hear from Blake coming up, all kinds of goodies coming your way. Thanks to Ryan O'Halloran for joining us this morning. Jaguars Today rolls on. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here. for Dandy Foods. Got to give a shout-out to my man Al Stewart on Twitter. He's always tweeting me pictures of his Dandy meals that he picks up. Says that I inspire him to go out there and eat some of that delicious Dandy food on a regular basis, and we appreciate those coming in on social media, Al, and everybody else out there who's tried them. Hey, don't thank me. I'm not going to thank you. We should all thank Dandy for the tremendous job they've done putting out quality products, homegrown, right here in the city of Jacksonville. The Thompson family, a bunch of locals, man, and they are just fun-loving, good people that want to put out a great quality product that you're going to feel satisfied that you got your money's worth with every time. It's a simple formula, isn't it? You get what you pay for and more with Dandy and the Anytime Deli line. Breakfast sliders, absolutely. Lunchtime sandwich wraps, they've got all kinds of varieties for you. I tell you about it all the time. You're going to find something, probably many somethings that you absolutely love. Anytime you're hungry, folks, do what I do. Go out and make yours a Dandy. Do it today.
My man, are you trying to blow my cover?
Whoa, I am getting too old for this. I can only imagine how you feel.
Who's the dumbass?
Dan Hicken.
What?
Mornings on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Now, more Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Happy 10th birthday, as it turns out, to Big Cat Country. As many have pointed out to me on Twitter, as one guy said, check their timeline. Hey, dude, a little live radio show. I did my best there to acknowledge.
How do you check their timeline to get their birthday?
It just says, well, because it did. There is something. If you scroll down their timeline, it has a link to the story that was the first story they ever published. Okay. 10 okay. years ago. Something like that.
I'm sorry about that. So, happy 10th
birthday. My sorry. Happy 10th birthday. All right? I'm going to patent happy birthday, by the way. I've decided copyright or trademark, whatever the proper phrase is, as the Patriots claim that they have, and apparently they have trademarked, do your job.
Do your job!
Really? When did Gus say that? That was prior to 2014, I'm pretty sure, right?
That was from his rant in Seattle.
I know it was. I'm asking.
Pretty old.
Yeah, I'm asking kind of rhetorically here.
But I'm guessing he's probably not the first coach to ever yell, do your job.
Like everyone in the world.
I'm
do
sure
your
there's
job,
been
man.
Thousands of teams, whether it be high school, college, or NFL, where their slogan for that year or that game or that week was do your job.
Or every walk of life, right? Any business that you're in, do your job. It's a pretty common phrase. Apparently, the Cowboys have that up on the wall in their facility, and Gronk got his panties all twisted because they're using our slogan. That's so ridiculous. So, happy birthday is now mine. Happy birthday, Big Cat Country.
Well, the Cowboys also stole another phrase from University of Michigan's football team. Their famous phrase in the locker room is, the team, the team, the team. And the Cowboys also put that up on their wall. So, they're stealing a couple phrases.
Oh, I thought their slogan was like, we win a bunch of games, but not a whole lot of championships. Is that not it for Michigan? I thought that
could be for the Cowboys.
Accurate. That's true. All right. Hey, let's go to Bud, who's checking. Is he calling from Pittsburgh? This is not Bud Dupree, is
confirmed.
It?
Confirmed. Not Bud Dupree.
Not Bud confirmed. Dupree. Excellent. Bud is on the line at 641-1010. Good morning, Bud.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
We're good. What's up?
I wanted to talk to you about the plus on the giveaway takeaways. I'm looking at four players on the Jaguars, Ramsey and Gibson and Smith and Jack, as far as takeaways and stuff on this team. And I'm just curious to be a 9 or a 10 team win. What would the plus sign be on there? What would you estimate?
That's a good question, Bud. And we've actually recently had this come up on the show. And we refreshed our research this morning, Tony. What'd you find out?
Yeah, if you look at the turnover ratio, I'm just looking at last year. I can look at previous years here in just a moment. But just looking at last year, there were only three teams in the NFL that had a turnover ratio of 10 or more in their favor. Cincinnati was plus 11. Kansas City was plus 14. Carolina was plus 20 in that category last year. So it is an indication. And really,
plus 20 will get you 15-1.
Yeah, 20 will do a lot for you. And if you look on the other end of the spectrum, the worst team in the league was Dallas at minus 22, and they were god-awful last year. Tennessee at minus 14, Baltimore at minus 14, and the Jags were in there at minus 10, 29th in the league. So there's not a whole lot of teams that are minus 10 or worse, and there's not a whole lot of teams that are 10 or better. Generally speaking, if you're plus 5 or better, you've done pretty well that season, it would appear. If you're plus 10 or better, you're upper echelon in the NFL.
And there's a lot of reason for hope that the Jags ratio is going to flip significantly, right? I mean, if Blake can cut his interceptions down, let's say, to 12, right, or 13, something like that. So you're adding 5 in that department. And then as Bud points out, you have what you hope are more ball-hawking playmakers available to you. Although Jalen Ramsey didn't get a lot of turnovers in college, I believe the potential is certainly there to be the Jags' top cover guy. And thus, you know, as a rookie, you're going to get challenged as well. Gibson on the back end is a proven guy. We've talked about Telvin needing to make more turnovers, but you also hopefully get a few more sack fumbles along the way. If you get a few more pressures out of Malik Jackson up the middle and Dante Fowler and Yannick Ngakoue coming off the edge. So, you know, I don't know if they flip a minus 10 to a plus 5, Tony, but I think they can get back to even or maybe just a little on the plus side. I think that would be a major step in the right direction. That the stat that you point out, 9 of the 13 teams that were plus 5 or better made the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good goal right there, plus 5 in total turnover. So that's not, you know, you just basically keep your head above water in that department and don't give it away more than you take it away, and you're going to fare pretty well. Plus 20 is absurd.
Yeah, plus 20 is ridiculous. The year before, Green Bay led the league at plus 14.
Wow.
Only three teams, again, that were 10 or better 2 years ago. New England and Houston joined them in that kind of group. And look, the teams that are better in that stat generally are pretty good teams. And I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to try to figure out what stats most correlate to success.
I think turnover is probably a significant one.
And I know I talked to Pete Prisco about this when he was in studio with me while you were on vacation, and he couldn't remember what it was, but he had talked to somebody with an NFL team that they said, we have these five stats that we look at. And he couldn't remember what they all were, but one of them was basically net rushing touchdowns for or against. Was a big stat in the National Football League, how many rushing touchdowns you get as opposed to how many you give up, because that's about controlling that short area of the field, and it's so vitally important down there in that area.
Well, the Jags were awful in that department last year.
Absolutely terrible, and I need to just text him and ask him if he remembers what the other ones were, because it was interesting to find out this is what NFL teams are looking at. This is our barometer for success statistically. And turnovers, I wouldn't be surprised if it was one of those.
All right, still to come, we'll hear from Todd Wash. We'll hear from Blake Bortles, a little bit from Gus Bradley, all that coming up, as well as this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL right around the corner, including the latest news on, I guess, technically still a Jaguar wide receiver, former Jaguar wide receiver, kind of in the news yesterday. We'll
He's
get
still
to
on
that.
The website.
Coming up. He is still on the website. If you go to the official team roster, way down at the bottom, you see that that designation that suspended but still officially part of the Jaguars roster, Justin Blackmon, we're talking about. We'll get to that coming up as well. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in on the phone lines or on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, August 25th. Going back to 1960, because I'm about at the end of my rope on these college all-star games, and I'm skipping them from now on. If I got anything else to tell you, the AFL started something new, Tony, in terms of football jerseys on this date in 1960. Any guess what that new thing was?
Tearaways?
Not tearaways. Earl Campbell is very upset with you. I thought he invented the tearaway. He certainly modeled it. No, they began placing players' names on the back of their jerseys for the first time then, so you could distinguish those guys a little bit easier, making the individual a star as well as the collective. Famous birthdays for this date: Cornelius Bennett, five-time Pro Bowl linebacker for primarily the Buffalo Bills, played a long time in the National Football League, made the second-team All-1990s squad, the Pro Football Hall of Fame squad. Dave Thomas, former Jaguar cornerback, one of the biggest cornerbacks you've seen come through this town, maybe the biggest. Jalen Ramsey, not quite even Dave Thomas size. He's 48 years old today. Dave Thomas born in 1968. And outstanding wide receiver and alleged shooter of people, Marvin Harrison, born on this date in 1972. He turns 44 years old today. He, of course, was inducted into the Hall of Fame this year, an eight-time Pro Bowler and a three-time first-team All-Pro. And collectively, that equals this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
First, to follow up on a story that we talked about yesterday, Ian Rappaport reported on Wednesday morning that the New England Patriots were going to release center Brian Stork. Washington, like the rest of the football world, got wind of that story, made a trade offer to the Pats before they pulled the trigger on releasing him, and the Redskins are reportedly sending a conditional seventh-round pick to the New England Patriots in exchange for the center.
Is it a condition that he doesn't retire?
Apparently, because he's considering that with the move to Washington on the horizon. Houston Texans starting center Nick Martin will miss the entire 2016 season after undergoing ankle surgery to repair a high ankle sprain that just wasn't healing properly. So a hit for the Houston Texans there. The Detroit Lions have released veteran running back Stephen Ridley today. And the dispute between Joey Bosa and the San Diego Chargers has gotten more fierce and become much, much more public over the course of the last 24 hours. The team sent out a statement with some of the details of the last offer they sent to Bosa and his representatives that was refused. The team says that offer included an initial signing bonus payment that is larger than any rookie has received in the past two drafts. More money in 2016 than every rookie in this year's class, except Philadelphia's Carson Wentz, and the largest payment and highest percentage of signing bonus received in the first calendar year of any Chargers first-round pick since the adoption of the NFL's collective bargaining agreement in 2011. The last point is clearly just politicking and trying to gain public favor, considering the Chargers haven't picked as high as number three since the new CBA was brought in. So, of course, Bosa will be the highest-paid draft pick during that time. According to sources familiar with the Chargers' latest offer, they still haven't completely come off either of the two sticking points for Bosa's side. The latest offer would have given Bosa 85% of his signing bonus this year, deferred 15% to next March. Didn't remove the offset language in the contract that would prevent the Chargers from having to pay Bosa if they decided to cut him during his rookie contract and he signed with another team. Bosa's side has been adamant that they would have been in camp from the start if the team would have met them on either of these issues. They still haven't, and now they've taken this battle public yesterday, announcing from the Chargers that they will pull this contract offer if it is not signed by Sunday and reduce the money, meaning that for now, Bosa's side has until Sunday to sign it. After that, there won't be anything to sign. He's certain to miss at least the beginning of the 2016 season now, could miss significantly more. I mean, heck, for now, it's still possible for Bosa to miss all of this season and re-enter the NFL draft next year.
Rare is the person willing to do that because, you know, look, where's he going to get drafted next year? Will it be top five if he takes a year off from football? There'll be plenty of people, he doesn't love the game enough. You know, his draft stock will fall. There's no question it would fall.
No doubt.
And people say, well, you can make up that money in your next contract. You never make up money.
No.
Okay?
That's part of the dispute. Is that this signing bonus, as you've been saying, signing bonus, I sign it, I get the money.
My bonus.
That's my
bonus.
For
signing.
And for people who are like, well, look, so what? He's deferring a couple million dollars to next year. Well, San Diego gets to make money off that a couple million dollars instead of Joey Bosa. And it's Joey Bosa's money.
Right.
To do with what he wants. Not San Diego's money to do with what they want. It's the player's money at that point. And for them to be sticking at that, and the deferral language is beyond stupid.
I want to ask Dave Caldwell next time I see him if this is becoming a common practice that maybe we're just not aware of with the deferral of bonus money when you get signed. Maurice Jones-Drew, I asked him last night, we did a show on Sirius, and I asked him about this, and he said, no, when he got his contracts, he got his money. There you go. Now, that years have passed since those his rookie deal and his extension that he got here in Jacksonville. But, you know, I just don't understand the whole concept. I always believed you sign that contract. Here's your signing bonus. They drop you a check for whatever the amount is. Why they should get to hold on to that money, as you said, and make money off of your money is beyond me. I just don't understand it. And why now, apparently, they're saying it's, what, 85% now and 15 later, and you can't bridge that gap? Just do it. Just pay the man his money, and you'll have him in there. You wanted him. You thought he was the best position player in the draft. You had your choice of anybody. Get it done.
It's strange that they also said that the offer was no longer on the table because
after Sunday.
Because once the offer is technically declined, it's legally no longer on the table, so you can't pull it back. It's legally once you reject an offer, it's no longer there.
I don't even know about the
legalities of it. And they put out a whole statement and everything.
Like, if I said to you, hey, I'm going to pay you $10 million,
right?
And you go, okay, I'll take that. I say, no, I changed my mind. I don't know if there's, you know, legally, if I'm bound to have to pay you that $10 million until all parties assign on the dotted line. You know what I mean? So I don't know. But that would, I just... Man, I am stubborn enough that even if it cost me that money, I would never play for the San Diego Chargers. Once you try to strong-arm me like this and rip me in public because you're keeping my money and you're afraid that maybe you're trying to protect yourself in case you screwed up in the draft, not my fault. You took me at 3 overall. You're going to tell me you're going to drop the offer after Sunday. I'll see you next what would it be, May
in
Philadelphia.
And putting out a statement like they did that not only is burning Bosa very publicly, but doing it with very specific language to mislead what the situation actually is behind the scenes. So people who maybe just read that Charger statement are like, well, what's wrong with this guy?
They're playing politics because they're in a situation where they need the support of the community in San Diego to agree to, you know, I think it's a hotel tax that they want to put in.
So it'll be people visiting paying to get the new
stadium. Right, it's people that are visiting the stadium, but the opponents of that say, hey, you know what, we could use this money for major infrastructure improvements that we need in San Diego. So it's a bit of a political football that they're throwing around out there. I can't imagine not getting your first overall pick signed. The number three overall pick would help you, you know, endear yourself to your fan base.
In today's day and age, I mean, I thought this kind of situation would be done. When they went to the slotting system in the NFL draft, it was like, all right, it's pretty clear. This guy made this much. This number two pick got this. The number four pick got this. This is what the number three pick is.
Pretty straightforward.
That we're getting into, I mean, it's September, basically, now, and they still don't have the number three pick in the draft signed because they won't accept language that says they don't have to pay him if he signs somewhere else. I mean, it's just, it's so beyond absurd to me, San Diego's stance in this whole thing.
Well, that's absurd. I think Justin Blackman's whole situation has been absurd for a long time now.
Yeah.
Blackman told to perform 100 hours of community service, pay a $1,000 fine plus court costs as he was placed on probation for a year after accepting or his guilty plea to a DUI was accepted yesterday. Misdemeanor DUI for Justin Blackman. Remember, he had the one DUI that got dropped down to underage possession of alcohol when he was in college, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had the one traffic stop where he was charged with misdemeanor marijuana possession and so that was not a DUI. But then he had the other one where he got pulled over speeding outside of Dallas where he was three times over the legal limit, right? And that's the one that got him in trouble with the National Football League and on it went. And so here's at least the second, probably at least the third that he's been caught with because the charges got knocked down. And who knows how many other countless times he's done it out there. I tweeted yesterday, Justin Blackman is damn lucky. Somebody said, I don't consider anything about Justin Blackman lucky. I'm like, he's lucky he's not in prison. I mean, if we're up to me, this is absolutely ludicrous how you can be a recidivist at something that threatens the lives of everybody who is anywhere in your vicinity. And yet he did a little community service and it'll be okay. And you know what? When you come around for your next DUI, who knows? Maybe we'll put you away for 30 days or something like that. You would never drive again if I was in charge of DUI laws on your second time. If you get to first one, I'd probably take your license for 10 years. You know what? You don't want to get a DUI? Don't drink and drive.
Yeah.
It's within your control. So, you know, is that too harsh? Maybe for some people, not for me. You'd never be behind the wheel of a car again if you were Justin Blackman, legally at least. But
yeah, I mean, look, I don't disagree with you and you know, my brother's a firefighter, so he has to go deal with the wreckage of these accidents when people drink and drive, and you know, innocent people are killed in these instances. One of my best friends is a state trooper; he deals with the same thing. And
my cousin Tony, who died last year, is about the 1 year anniversary about 2 days ago.
I mean,
killed by a drunk driver, left behind a 2 year old son. Just awful, devastating.
It's completely selfish. And look, I'm not saying that that people who have this issue with drinking and they get behind the wheel of a car, I think Justin Blackman needs rehab. I think he needs treatment, right? Like, I do. I think he needs that. But if he's not going to be willing to do that, then something needs to be done where he doesn't have the opportunity to get behind the wheel of a car and hurt somebody, including himself.
Right.
And that they're going to say whatever, probation, basically, for this guy. I mean, what's that going to do to help Justin Blackman at this point? But if he doesn't want to hold himself accountable, then the legal system ought to have ways to do that for him if he's not
It just seems like there needs to be more teeth in that particular instance or that particular circumstance when it comes to, again, you know, anybody could be the guy next to you driving down the highway. It could be anybody. And it devastates so many lives over and over again. And it's totally, totally within your control whether you do it or not. Anyway, off the soapbox. And on to other things. Coming back, we'll hear from Todd Wash, Jaguars defensive coordinator. Greg Olson speaking today, so we'll bring you some of that audio tomorrow. Blake Bortles as well, following yesterday's practice as we get ready for Jags and Bengals coming up Sunday night. You'll hear it right here, 5 o'clock for the pregame on your home for the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
1010XL, 92.5 FM.
You know, I think we've seen improvement from the first game to the second game. You know, our first unit got more snaps, and we've seen some real good production out of them. In the first game, we had a couple busts that gave up two plays with our first unit, which was concerning, and we came back and we played, you know, really well with our first group in that second game.
That's Jaguars defense coordinator Todd Wash is talking about week one to week two of the preseason. I'm sure he wants to see more improvement in week three as well. Tony is cleaning up a couple of things right here. One, not Trask, it was Strand. Thank you to, I believe it was TJ on the text line that corrected me on the name of the Fear the Walking Dead character. Telling you, it looked like him anyway. It's only been back for one episode this season. Don't get me upset. All right. Also, the Jags-Steelers game, as several have pointed out, the most recent one coming in this morning, the Jags-Steelers 2007 playoff game gets released on YouTube tomorrow. It's one of three Jaguars games and one of many quote-unquote classic NFL games for every franchise that will be released in partnership with YouTube by the National Football League. So if you want to relive David Garrard's run, if you want to really, what you want to do is look for the dude in the black trench coat underneath the goalpost when Scobie kicks the eventual, what turned out to be game-winning field goal. I could have caught it right there. So that's what I'm going to do. Go to YouTube tomorrow. I'm fast-forwarding into the final 2 minutes of the game. Looking for me, Tony, is what I'm going to do. So anyway, check that out for your viewing enjoyment on YouTube. For your listening enjoyment right now, let's get back to Todd Wash. And he weighed in on a guy that we all were impressed with in the brief amount of time we saw him, Jalen Ramsey.
He can run pretty much with anybody in the league. You know, we knew that when we drafted him. But just his competitive nature, you know, and he's a guy that, you know, works in the classroom, works on the field, and really excels during games. So, you know, we're very excited about it.
Ramsey, on his second snap on an NFL field, ran through a gigantic right tackle to make a tackle in the backfield for a six-yard loss to force a third and 16. The next play is where Telvin got the personal foul to extend right. That drive for the Bucs. But Todd Wash was asked about Jalen Ramsey's play there where he got that tackle for loss.
You know, we were excited just how physical he played on that snap. You know, he didn't come up there and try to dodge the offensive lineman and got himself in position to make plays. So he's not scared to put his face on people. And, you know, that's something that's important to us. We want to be known as a physical defense, not only just our front seven, but our back guys also. So we're excited about that play.
Yeah, few corners built like him that can play that physical style and hold up to it. I think certainly that's one of the things you're excited about when you see Jalen Ramsey out on the football field. Todd Wash talked as well about a first-year player, second-year pro. Dante Fowler didn't play at all last year. And talking about how he's trying to lead him into being a professional.
Dante, you know, as we all know, the physical attributes that he has. And the thing that we're challenging Dante on right now is being a pro, you know, being great in the classroom, taking it from the classroom to the field, studying more tape on his own. You know, so we're really pressuring him right now to become a pro as an early age.
As somebody pointed out on the text line, I'm looking for the exact one. Here we go. Todd Wash commented on Dante being challenged to be a pro with classroom studies. Any thoughts on why he wasn't learning this last year while rehabbing? It's a pretty damn fair question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing he had under his control, and I'm not making excuses. I'm giving you what I think maybe reasons. He's just a young guy coming in, and, you know, you're not playing, and you'd like everybody to be, I'm assuming, you know, the most studious guy and soaking it up, and clearly he's got some learning to do in that department, or else his defensive coordinator would not be mentioning it at this point in time. I got to believe that Dante absorbed some things while he was around, but that seems to be an area where he can get better in. And I think, you know, I tend to agree with the person who texted that one in. This seems to be an issue that you, even if you should have recognized it during his rookie season, even if he wasn't playing, and maybe corrected it prior to now.
Yeah, and it could potentially be reading too much into a comment.
Maybe.
Where maybe Todd Wash is just saying, you know, this is a guy who's his second year in the league. We still need him to get better at doing these specific things.
He's got to match this to his physical ability.
And if he had played, you know, all of last season, maybe that'd still be a discussion. Right? We don't know, but he didn't play last year, so that kind of comment comes as a, well, was he putting in the work last year when he was? Like, that's the natural question to ask when you hear something like that. Todd Wash, another comment on Dante Fowler from yesterday, said that this is still a learning process for the young player?
It's tough as a rookie, because he is basically a rookie. You know, he had a lot of success early when he came into OTAs and all that kind of stuff, and then he lined up against Dotson. You know, that was a learning experience for him, which I'm glad it happened in practice. And, you know, I think it opened his eyes a little bit, that it's not as easy as I think it's going to be. So you see him, you know, understanding that he's got to continue to get better. But I think as a coaching staff, you know, we have some one-on-one individual meetings with him to study his pass rush and all that kind of stuff, and he's getting better at it.
Yeah, keep in mind, hey, look, he's not the first young player that has had to learn better study habits, right? As
no.
Dante Fowler Jr. could line up in college and pretty much be a wrecking ball, because at times he was a man among boys, even in the SEC. I mean, it's still not the level of play close to what you're going to get in the National Football League. Everybody in the National Football League was a star in college, and you're not going up against stars on every
sure.
single snap.
And as much as you move him around, and look, the Jags are going to do the same thing. We've seen it in the preseason already. They're matching him up against what they perceive to be maybe the weaker of the offensive tackles on some of these third downs. Well, when you're at the University of Florida, there may be a NFL tackle on the left side, but that doesn't mean there's one on the right.
No.
You know, so when you move Dante over there to that side of the line of scrimmage, he is kind of that wrecking ball. In the NFL, everybody's worthy of being an NFL player, and it is a completely different level that he has to take his game to.
Pass rush overall, Todd Wash asked about where it stands right now for the Jags.
Well, we had some good disruption versus Jameis at Tampa. I think he had 7 passes, didn't complete one. We had a pick, and we had you know, some pressure. So we were excited about that. The biggest thing for me is that it needs to be consistent, down in and down out, not just on third down. Everybody talks about getting pressure on third down. We need to get pressure on first and second down with the guys we have on the field.
No doubt. One more comment here from Todd Wash. Miles Jack, who's expected to see some time with the starting defense on Sunday night against the Cincinnati Bengals. Todd Wash was asked about Miles Jack and his knowledge of the defense to this point.
You see some real good flashes of it, and he's starting to understand the package. Matter of fact, yesterday he corrected our strong safety. So, you know, when we seen that on tape, we're just like, you know, that's neat to see him take that next step mentally. But he's another guy that physically has all the skills in the world, and he's learning that it's not just physically. We got to get it all mentally, and he's doing a nice job.
And once again, as we talked about earlier, he's expected to get some run with the first team. Paul Posluszny will not play as long. And I don't think it's a slight on Paul. It's probably more of a, we know what Paul's got.
Yeah.
We're going to protect this guy. He's going to be valuable to us during the regular season. He's going to play some, but then Miles Jack will come in before the wholesale substitutions come and get some reps with the first team defense, which it's got to be great for him. He said it's going to be like the Super Bowl for him. This guy's so excited to play football. It's unbelievable. And I'm sure Dante and many others are as well. But for the guys like those two in particular who've had it withheld due to injury for so long, they got to be itching to get out there. All right, let's get a call in before we get to Blake Bortles here. Justin checking in from Atlanta. We get them from all over the place, don't we? Good morning, Justin. How are you? Can you punch him up? There he goes. What's up, buddy?
Hey, let me ask you guys something. There are two guys that I've watched in the last two games on the NFL Rewind that I think are doing really, really well, and I wanted to see what you guys thought the likelihood of them making the team was. One of them is Josh Johnson, and I'm not talking about just the interception he had that ran back, but if you watch his coverage and his tackling, man, he's another physical guy, I think. And I didn't really know anything about him prior to him coming to Jacksonville, but I wanted to see what you guys thought. And then the other one is Chris Smith. In my opinion, I've watched Chris Smith pretty closely, and he seems to be, I don't know, he's got something under him that is just making him like a complete bull in there. And he's almost getting to the quarterback and has a couple of times just about every single snap he takes.
All right. Well, thank you, Justin. I appreciate it. We'll weigh in on both of those guys. This is Gus. Was this from yesterday, Tyler?
Yeah, yesterday's press conference. He was asked about Chris Smith and the high number of snaps he's been seeing.
You know what? He's been impressive. He has been. You know, look to him to get a little bit more opportunity even this week. We really want to take a look at him. So, you know, it used to be where we saw it in practice, and sometimes it didn't carry over the games. It's preseason, but, you know, we're starting to see more of it carry over in his effort and some of his toughness. And we played him multiple positions. He's played some 4B for us, so inside the tackle. So we're trying to get him, you know, with the idea that the more that you can do, I think his big challenge is to own special teams. You know, that's, you know, a lot of times these decisions come to that, and that's where he's really got to show up.
With a lot of these guys, Tony, it comes down to numbers and how many you keep in at the position. I think Chris Smith has a better chance than Josh Johnson to make the team. I think it's a long shot for either one of these guys to make the football team, though.
I do, too. I can't remember who I heard discussing this earlier this week on, it may have been Jaguars Monday. I'm just not sure where I heard it. But I know I heard them talking specifically about Chris Smith, and he's been better. He looks better this year than he has through the last couple of years. And I think the question is, I don't know that he fits into the numbers on the defensive line, but if he gives them enough in special teams, maybe that's his route to make the team. Like, if he is a core four special teams guy, right, and apparently he's been pretty good on special teams through this preseason to this point too, then maybe that's his route to get on the team. Now, they don't have a bunch of numbers at that Leo spot. They don't have a bunch there. They got a couple guys that they really like at that spot, but they don't have a bunch there, so maybe there's space for a guy like Chris Smith, but I think it's not going to be what he gives them, you know, rushing the pass or anything like that. It's going to be, okay, we can live with him being on the field if we have to for those kind of snaps. We think he's going to be really good for us in special teams. That's going to be his route. The defensive backfield, there's too many bodies.
Right. Josh Johnson, keep in mind, is playing against third and fourth string wide receivers.
Right.
And look, he made the most of his opportunity the other night.
That's all you can do.
He put some good film down, which may help him get on a practice squad, here or elsewhere. But when you talk about at the cornerback position, you got House, you got Ramsey, you got Amukamara, you got Grotch, you have Colvin, who certainly won't be there for the first four games. We know they love Nick Marshall. I think they'd love to see him make the team this year. You have Demetrius McCray, who, you know, I don't know if he's ahead of Josh Johnson or not, but I don't know if either one of those guys, I don't think either one of those guys
right,
makes a football team. It's just, again, the too many, Ramsey, House, Amukamara, Grotz, Colvin, I think all ahead, and I think Nick Marshall is if you're keeping six, maybe five early in the season, who knows, maybe they keep an extra guy because Colvin is going to miss the first month of the season. But, again, odds are long on either one of these guys.
Yeah, and I can't remember who the player was, but I can remember a handful of years ago when Del Rio was still here, the Jags had a player that had three interceptions in the first 2 weeks of the preseason and was cut in the first wave of cuts. I mean, it's just, you don't know what they're actually seeing on tape. It's a very flashy play, 79-yard, you know, pick six is a big-time play. And for Josh Johnson, I don't know that that means he's going to make a roster in Jacksonville, but maybe it gives him an opportunity somewhere else if it's not here.
All right, let's get to the quarterback, Blake Bortles, here for a few comments. One, he was asked about overcoming mistakes in a game. You know, he's had issues before where he's had turnovers and it's gone south for the team at that point. Knowing that you've got the firepower to come back and overcome that, how's that playing out?
We expect to be successful. We expect to move the ball and put up points and do what we do in practice in the game. You know, and I think stuff's going to happen. People are going to jump off sides. Guys are going to drop balls. I'm going to throw interceptions. People are going to fumble. I think that part of it is inevitable, and trying to minimize it as much as possible and maintain it. And then obviously the other side of it is being able to overcome it when that stuff happens, being able to bounce back like we did and have a rough, you know, first series and then go two scoring drives in a row, I think is good, and I think showed, the character of our offense.
Yeah, the defense hasn't been good enough for the last couple of years, really, for when Blake throws that pick for them to stay in a ball game. It hasn't been good enough, and maybe the defense taking a step up this year means that the picks don't look so killer when they happen. Now, you want them to cut them down either way, but maybe both sides kind of help each other. One thing that has been helping this Jaguars offense to this point in the preseason is the run game, which has looked really good through the first couple of weeks. Blake says yesterday that we'll go as far as that running game will take us.
The better we're able to run the ball, the better our whole offense is going to be. You know, I think it opens up so many more things. You know, when we get TJ and Chris and Denard and these guys rolling, and the offensive line's done a really good job in the first two games. So I think continuing to work on that because I think it helps out our offense really in all aspects, and we'll kind of go as far as, you know, our running game is able to take us.
All right, I have not heard this next one, Tyler. You said that you'd characterize the question as something to the effect of, is there anything Allen Robinson could do that would surprise Blake Bortles at this point?
Exactly. Like, what, he's been doing ridiculous things, and what would he have to do to catch the ball that would be impressive to you?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he'd chop his hands off. Nothing. I mean, he's unbelievable. Him and Hearns are on the jugs machine every day before practice starts. The work ethic and the want to and attitude for those two guys is unbelievable. I think they obviously hear all the hype and all the stuff, you know, about each other and about themselves individually, and it doesn't bother them one bit. You know, they come to work every day, want to get better, want to be a part of this team, and want to make us successful.
Keep chopping hands, apparently. New slogan? Try that out.
Well, it's a good sign.
Copyright? Anybody got that trademarked?
I mean, it's a good sign when the best players on your football team are the guys that everyone else is saying is working the hardest too.
Why? Maybe there's a correlation, right?
There
are a lot of talented guys. The guys that actually work the hardest to get the most out of their talent turn out to be the best players.
And through 2 weeks of the preseason, I mean, Allen Robinson has looked like a man among boys.
Yes, he has.
The step up has been unbelievable for a guy that looked outstanding last year. It looks like he could be something special.
By the way, how high does he go in our Jaguars Today fantasy draft?
Oh, Lord.
I mean, he's going first round in any draft anyway.
If he got out of the middle of the first round, I'd be surprised.
And maybe put the over-under at about 6.5
in
a 12-teamer.
Somewhere in there. Like the Dez Bryants and DeAndre Hopkins that may go ahead of him in a national draft not going to go ahead of him.
I wouldn't think. You know, certainly, Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr., and Julio may be more attractive to the masses, but not too many guys out there. What else we got?
I wouldn't be totally shocked if whoever had the first pick took him. Honestly.
Oh, it depends on the kind of
I wouldn't
person.
Be totally shocked, though. I'd be like, all right.
Well, in the Hacker Fantasy League, two quarterbacks went in the two first rounds for one team. One guy took two quarterbacks in the first two rounds.
But they score the most points.
Oh, absolutely.
Just like
pickers. Pickers have the most points in NFL history.
Right, exactly.
I
Ryan
would applaud
Longwell.
So loud for that guy in my draft.
Oh, please. If you know what? That may, if you guarantee that you take a quarterback in each of the first two rounds, you can have a spot in the Jaguars Today Fantasy League.
Yeah, maybe.
Right.
One more comment here from Blake Bortles. We talked about the run game a moment ago. Well, that doesn't work without that offensive line. And Blake said it's been just awesome through these first 2 weeks.
The first 2 weeks have been awesome. You know, got sacked, once in New York, and that was easily avoidable. You know, I think the protection and stuff they've been able to do is really, and I think it's everything. You know, it's the scheme, it's us being better with protection calls, it's wide receivers getting open, it's backs being in the right place to pick guys up. So it's kind of a group effort, and definitely the offensive line has done a really good job.
Have they done enough to make you not worry about them? That is part of the reason we asked the question we asked today, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. We'll look at the fan feedback spotlight coming up next, where we ask you, based on what you've seen through half of the preseason now, what is the biggest current worry you have with this Jacksonville Jaguar roster, their performance, or what have you? And maybe some of those questions will be answered on Sunday night, but we'll get to your feedback coming up next. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars took the field today to get ready for Sunday's third preseason game of the year against the Cincinnati Bengals. A couple news and notes from today's practice. Miles Jack could see first team time at middle linebacker Sunday night because Paul Posluszny doesn't need that many snaps. Jaguars defensive coordinator Todd Walsh said they've had one-on-one meetings with Dante Fowler about, quote, being a pro, including on his own film work. Walsh said it's not an indictment on him that they've met with him, just part of rookie transition. On the injury front, defensive tackle Sheldon Day is still out with a back injury. Coaches say the only worry when he returns is his conditioning, not knowledge of the scheme. This Sunday, Cincinnati comes to town. Kickoff is set for 8 p.m. We'll see you at the bank. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
What did he do to that bathroom?
I don't know.
That he deserves a statue.
Oh, my gosh. Look, hopefully Blake is the guy that really takes that school to new heights in terms of producing NFL talent. Of course, Dante Culpepper went there. Pretty damn good, right? Uh-huh. He was a runner-up NFL MVP one season. So it's not like UCF, Brandon Marshall, right? There are plenty of guys. Doug Baldwin, did he? No, he went to Doug Baldwin with Stanford, right?
Correct.
Yeah. There's another receiver that went to UCF that I can't think of.
Is it Rashad Perriman?
It's not him. Somebody prior to that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. George O'Leary went 81-68, and they gave him a statue. That tells you about the state of
Kamar
UCF
Aiken?
Football historically. No, somebody before Kamar Aiken. What are you looking at? UCF players in the NFL
I had to
right
get
now?
The alumni list.
That's
fine.
I could have sworn there was another receiver. I know there was another receiver in the last 10 years or so. And it's probably not even that big of a deal. It doesn't matter. I just remembered noting to myself at the time, UCF seems to put out some NFL receivers. That's all. What else did I want to get to here?
Mike Sims Walker.
I wonder if it was. It might have been Mike Sims Walker. Duh, who played here? Maybe it was. Maybe that's who I'm thinking of. I don't know. I don't know why I didn't think of that sooner, because I have memory issues at times.
Don't forget about Storm Johnson.
No, he's not a receiver, but I didn't forget about him.
But he's the great.
We saw him this past weekend.
UCF great.
played well, actually, for the Bucks. You know, and the opportunities that he got. This one in on the text line. We're talking about the biggest worry. Biggest worry, dot, dot, dot. The mascot. Someone signed someone not Batman. I promise. Okay. It's me. Hashtag still salty. I mean, come on. No zip line. I'm worried about it. All right. But that's your biggest worry. That's a pretty
a good one.
That's first world problems for you right
there. Let's hope.
But I'm with you, Batman. You should have been ziplining and death-defying all over that stadium. But we move on for now. Tony, what did we get on Twitter today? We asked folks their current biggest worry after seeing half the preseason go by.
From Johnny, special teams has been awful. From Teal Rising, depth. I like the frontline talent in a lot of positions, but if we lose certain starters, we'll be in trouble. We call that the NFL. From Kevin, biggest worry is which running back do I take in fantasy, Ivory or Yeldon?
Got to go Ivory.
Laugh out loud. From Real Man Block, he says pass rush, his biggest concern. From Muti the Mailman, that we're 0-2 again already. Oh, woe is us. Wait, check that. I have a football IQ. From Chad, my biggest worry is people judging Dante Fowler too harshly for not having 10-plus sacks. From Isaiah, left tackle, D-line depth, and secondary depth. From Brian, depth at free safety, an injury to Gibson could be scheme-altering. From Alvaro, Gus Bradley preaching the same BS as last year, quote, we are getting better, hashtag solid. From Jeff, edge rush, I think Malik and Sendarek can bring pressure inside. Outside, almost none, at least to this point. From Linda Sun, we got number one, special teams defense, number two, outside pass rush, and number three, offensive line depth, hashtag own the South, hashtag we have been very patient. From Jeff, the team's health, still not convinced the lower part of roster is a strength. From Chris, that we might actually be good this year, and Cole Fartley won't be tweeting economics. And from Chad, I worry I might pick Jags players on my fantasy team, and then we suck again. Hashtag water sucks. Hashtag we suck again. Hashtag water boy.
All right. On the Facebook page, Shaw says, David Lamb called out Jalen Ramsey and basically called him a turd. I did hear that Lamb rant, and I think that's a fairly accurate representation of it. He said the last two players who were called out by the media in such a way, Jerry Porter and Justin Blackman, did not end up with long careers. If your biggest worry is Dave's commentary impacting the effectiveness of Jalen Ramsey, you don't have many worries.
Right.
Okay, he's going to be fine. Somebody did ask on the text line, why doesn't he like to talk to the media? I don't know. Some people are like that. You know? He doesn't, you know, look, he's, in the end, I don't think most Jaguar fans honestly care.
No, we had a fan come up and have this conversation with us last week after one of the practices, and I told him, look, he can do whatever he wants to. If
play
he
well.
Plays well, nobody's
going
to
stay out of
care.
Trouble, play well, do your job. Nobody's, you know, going to get on you too bad. I mean, I say nobody. Some may. You know, my biggest concern isn't a guy who, you know, don't act like a star and not be a star, though.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you're gonna have that attitude, back it up with your play on the field, and you can get away with an awful lot. Honestly, there's 53 guys in that locker room. There's always somebody to talk to. He'll be encouraged to talk enough. He may not say, you know, he may not give you two-minute answers.
Yeah,
but
he's too high-profile not to talk.
Right. He'll be encouraged in the appropriate way to talk. You'll hear quotes from him. I don't think there'll be anything particularly juicy. So what? Let's see. Daniel said that the team we see now is not the same when it counts, such as not effectively running the ball, third down conversions, scoring touchdowns, and that the defense will still struggle getting a rush and won't get off the field on third downs. Well, that's pretty much just a blanket worry right there. Uh-oh, none of this is real. And it's possible, right? I mean, we see that in the preseason every year with teams, Tony. Teams look much worse at times than they turn out to be. They also look much better at times than they turn out to be. But I'd rather look better. I'd rather look good and use that as a building block and a stepping stone to better performance. Let's see what else. Depth at free safety. We have a pretty rough schedule for an unproven team. All that said, team looks great. Can't wait till September 11th. That was Lee weighing in on that. Another Josh, Coach Gus Bradley. He's my biggest worry. Can improve his head coach material. Pass blocking by the O-line and edge rush from the defense. Hashtag Jaguars today. Let's see. A biggest concern for Matt, someone getting hurt Sunday night against the Bengals. Losing. I'm not even going to say the words. I'm not even going to speak them out loud, lest I have that power to speak them into existence. Not going to happen. What do we got here? Do we want to do this? All right, this is a good question. This is from, what is that? I can't. DJ on the south side. Man, my eyes are going, bro. Somebody texted or tweeted me, hey, what do you think of my fantasy roster? I'm like, you're going to have to put that in Braille or something, man, because I cannot read that. I can't see that anymore. And I've not gone over to the glasses side of things yet. I don't know if I need them all that much. I can see when I'm driving. I can see the television. Mm-hmm. What else do I need? DJ on the south side, get in quick if you can, buddy. What's up?
Yeah, now in the training camp, preseason almost done. What's the perception of the record now? Before, it was 7-9, 8-8 would be good. Man, I'm thinking 11-5 or not 10-6 now.
All right.
So what's the perception of the record now?
That's a question that we will ask really after the last preseason game and going into the regular season. But I've had them as kind of a 9-7 team along the way, and I still feel like they're in that. I don't want to get too crazy. I think, you know, the upper end, Tony, I think it's possible that they could go 12-4, but they got to get a lot of things that go in their direction. I think it's possible they go 6-10. That's the problem. There's, you know, there's a wide variance. I've had them, you know, kind of feel like 9-7 is very achievable for this team. And, you know, I'm probably on that 8.5 over-under total right now for the Jags. And, you know, maybe that'll change as the season rolls around if they're completely healthy. If Kelvin Beachum shows us something and that line, look, we get a glimpse of what that entire starting unit is going to look like and they perform. And, you know, I can adjust it upwards a little bit. But in the end, it's not going to matter, right? I mean, if you add this, you think they're going to go 10-6. If they come out of the gates 1-3, doesn't matter what you think. You're not going to be happy with it.
I'm not changing expectations based on preseason football games. I'm just not going to do it. I expected this team to win somewhere between 7-9 games, and I still expect this team to win somewhere between 7-9 games because they've been relatively healthy coming out of this preseason. Hopefully they get through the Cincinnati game unscathed as well. But the health has been good for this roster, so my expectations have not changed. I expected them to be a little more consistent on offense. It looks like they may be. I expected the defense to be better. It looks like it's probably going to be. So they are who I thought they were coming into this preseason, and hopefully that carries over into the regular season as well.
All right. Thank you to the people who pointed out on the text line driven by Duval Ford that Brandon Marshall went to UCF, as we mentioned him first.
Yeah.
You know, there was another. Somebody mentioned Sean Jefferson was the guy I was trying to think of. Mm. Not a super high-profile guy. But at the time when UCF was not putting many guys in the National Football League and they had a couple of starting wide receivers for a period of time. It just stuck in my mind.
I love the fact, too, as we say goodbye for this Thursday edition. I do love the fact that we ask, you know, what's your biggest concern? And everyone's like, depth here, depth here, depth there, depth, depth, depth. And in my head, I'm going, yeah, like every team in the league feels that way. When they lose a certain guy, it's going to be big trouble. Arizona was a team that looked like he could have been going to the Super Bowl last year. Tyrann Mathieu got hurt. Everything changed for the Arizona Cardinals defensively when Mathieu, that kind of wild card they had in that secondary, got hurt. So one of the best teams in the NFC lost the guy, and the depth wasn't good enough. That's the NFL. It's never going to be good enough when the backup guys are the guys that you're relying on a week-to-week basis.
All right, we are out of here today. Thanks to Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times-Union for joining us on the program live from EverBank. And we'll hear tomorrow from Greg Olson, who spoke with the media this morning. Glad we could bring you a little bit of Todd Wash, Kelvin Beachum, Blake Bortles, Gus Bradley. This morning, it's kind of what we do. We focus on the Jaguars, a novel concept on a show called Jaguars Today. Tomorrow, David Garrard joins us in studio, and plenty more hijinks will ensue. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Don't go anywhere, because the Midday Chalk is coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.